This podcast is not meant to be professional advice of any kind. It is meant to be informative and entertaining. If you make any changes to your life, see the appropriate professional before you do so. This podcast is not meant to be professional advice of any kind. It is meant to be informative and entertaining. If you make any changes to your life, see the appropriate professional before you do so. What kind of super ager are you? Go to ageist.com/quiz, take the super ager quiz, and we'll send you directed, personalized information to help you super age the best that you can. Welcome to Super Age. My name's David Stewart. I am the founder of Ageist and your host on the Super Age show. We talk about how to live healthier, how to live longer, and how to be happier. And who doesn't want that? Today's show is brought to you by Timeline Nutrition with their breakthrough product, MitoPure, the first clinically tested urolithin A supplement, which is showing tremendous results for mitochondrial health. Go to timelinenutrition.com/ageist, use the code ageist at checkout, and save 10% off your first order of MitoPure. Today's show is also brought to you by Sunday's Dog Food, the very best dog food we know of. We love our dogs, and we know you do too. Feed them the best food you can. Go to sundaysfordogs.com/ageist. Get this, save 40%. Today's show is also brought to you by AmeriCorps Seniors, our favorite volunteer organization for people 55 plus. Go to AmeriCorps.gov/yourmoment to learn more and give back to your community. Welcome to episode 177 of the Super Age Podcast. It is great to have you with us. We'll be dropping this March 27th, 2024. Today on the show, we have as our guest Dr. Vonda Wright. And Vonda is an orthopedic surgeon. And we're going to talk about hips, knees, and age, cartilage, arthritis, treatment, repairs, dealing with inflammation, all these sort of good things. And, you know, she's an orthopedic surgeon, but she's also a team doctor for a number of professional sports teams and rugby. Ooh, boy, talk about abusive to the body. Anyway, we're going to get with Dr. Vonda in just a quick moment. Today, I am in New York, and I spent most of the day sort of puzzling about a piece that I'll be dropping in Ageist this week about the Andrew Huberman article in New York Magazine this week. And he has a, you know, I think the most popular wellness podcast maybe in the world called Huberman Lab. If you believe what's going on there, and it seems very well-researched, proper journalism, dude is a piece of work. And he's got a lot of personal issues there. And, you know, I've sort of been reading the reaction to this. And some people are just blowing this off, saying like, well, his personal life is not overlapping with his professional activities. But hey, it does. He's not in Motley Crue, right? Out there doing this kind of BS with all these different women and abusing people. He's not some crazy artist. No, he is in the job of being a credible authority on health, wellness, science, and also emotional health and trust and honesty. And he's got all this stuff going on. This is just no go. You don't get a hall pass for this. I think that thinking about this, and I've been thinking about this far too much, this is a massive failure of leadership. He is in a leadership position. He put himself there. He chose to have this really well-received podcast. And I think he has been very helpful to a lot of people. His thing doesn't really work for me for a lot of reasons. It just causes me more confusion than anything else. But okay, that's just me. I think for a lot of people, he has been helpful. But that math changed this week. I think that you cannot separate out personal behavior, personal values from these other things, especially if you are in a position of leadership. People look up to people like this, not just for what they're saying, but the way they live. And I think that we have become, in this society, far too numb to this sort of bad behavior. And we just put it off on like, oh, well, you know, this guy is ideologically aligned with me, or I like his information. This is just all about canceling culture and all this kind of stuff. Well, I'm sorry. Behavior has consequences. And this is really bad behavior. And I think that, you know, if this guy was an athlete and he had a Nike contract, that contract wouldn't exist today. Like, he may not be ever playing in the NBA again. If he was somebody who was the CEO of a major corporation and something like this came out, he wouldn't have a job today. there are people trying to give him a pass. And I think that's not the right approach here. They're probably going to hire crisis PR. He's going to go out and say like, well, you know, the things these women said are not quite true. And maybe if they are true, I'm sorry, I'm going to be better. Yeah, I don't think so, Andrew. This is a bigger deal than that. And I think that, I mean, it's unfortunate. There's the Joe Rogans of the world. There's, you know, some other Sinclair people out there. We have responsibilities. The people out there, I have this tiny little platform. It's nothing compared to these people, but I take my responsibility really seriously. Somebody comes on this show, I try to be careful with what I say. If they say something or I say something that's like out of bounds, that gets edited out. All right, this is not a democracy. This is not about free speech. This is about presenting information to people that I feel a responsibility to, and to do that properly, and to not be giving people inflammatory or other information that may just be confusing. And it's disconcerting to me that this is going on already. Two poles of this thing seem to be, you know, coming to the surface. He has a number of friends, some of who I know, who have come to his defense very publicly, and that's fine. I think if this was one of my friends, I would probably do my best to support them also. However, this is someone who has, as I said, he's in a leadership position, something that he put himself in. People look up to him. And as I look at some of the comments on social media, on some of the feeds, you know, these sort of 20s sort of guys, the Joe Rogan fans, also in this club, admire his ability to deceive and juggle these apparently half a dozen women across the country. And this sort of like awful behavior, they want to know how to do it because they want to do it. This is just no go. I find it all really appalling. I want to be careful here. I feel bad for Huberman. I think he had a very difficult childhood and sort of seemed like he was destined for prison at some point. And now, you know, he sort of pulled himself up. PhD at Stanford. Amazing. Great job. But all this other stuff, this is BS. This whole thing about like my lab. What lab? You apparently don't have a lab. Like what science? You don't seem to be involved in any research other than scheduling all these various trysts you're having and deceiving them. That's a lot of work. I don't know. I find it all very upsetting, partially because I think he, as I said earlier, has basically been a positive out there. He's really helped inform people about a lot of stuff. I mean, I sort of tuned out maybe, I don't know, it was like a couple of years ago because 90% of what I would hear would be really interesting and useful. And then 10% would be just bananas. But it was like couched in all this sort of sciencey lingo and science backed and, you know, all this sort of, and everything was very precise. Like, this is the protocol, this is the stack, you got to do this, blah, blah, blah. But it was kind of nuts. And I would talk to, you know, my people, because I'm not a scientist, I don't have an MD, and I would say, does this sound right? And they're like, no, this is crazy. And so what I found was it was just like way too much work to discern what was valuable and what wasn't. And so I just gave up. It was just too hard. That was just me. That just didn't work for me. But I think that this article that came out, it seems like pretty good journalism. And of course, some people are going to say it was a hit job. And I'm okay with that. Like, if you're in the public eye, you have a responsibility to keep the bar high on your behavior. And if you don't, this is what journalists are for, to sort of ferret this out and find contradictions. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I hope this never happens to me, but I don't engage in this kind of behavior, so I don't think it would. Anyway, it's taken up far too much of my mental real estate today, Mr. Huberman. I wish you all the best. I hope you recover from this. But I got to say, buddy, like, it's not about crisis PR. You got other issues going on. So enough with Andrew. I hope you have a good life out there. Anyway, we are going to get with Dr. Vonda Wright. We're going to talk about hips and knees and all that sort of stuff that can be an issue for us as we get a little older in just a moment after a quick word from our sponsors. One supplement that I take every day is MitoPure from Timeline Nutrition. It contains urolithin A. There's a tremendous amount of science out there about urolithin A, and it's all very positive. Urolithin A helps us with something called mitophagy, which is cleaning out our older, not-so-functional mitochondria. And at 65, I've built up some dysfunctional mitochondria. Cleans those out, replaces them with new, better-functioning mitochondria. What it does is it helps us with all the energy production in our bodies. Our brains, our immune systems, our muscles, all of those include mitochondria. They're the energy powerhouse, and we want to have the best mitochondria we can. This is why I take MitoPure every day, why members of my scientific board take it, why their families take it. It's a great product. If you go to timelinenutrition.com/ageist, use the code ageist at checkout, and you'll save 10% on your first purchase. We speak a lot around here about how great it feels to give back, to mentor, to be out there being useful with all this knowledge and strength that we've accumulated over the years. There's an organization that I'd like you all to know about. It's called AmeriCorps Seniors. It's a volunteer organization for adults 55 plus, not just 65 plus or retirees, and they will work with volunteers to match them with opportunities based on their interests. Go to AmeriCorps.gov/yourmoment or follow the link in our show notes below to learn more. AmeriCorps is AmeriCorps.gov/yourmoment. Connect to volunteer opportunities that match your skills, interests, and desire to be part of something bigger, because the people in your community need you, and you'll get back so much more than you'll give. Quick reminder, after my conversation with Dr. Vonda Wright, we've got Just Try This, that tip of the week where we give you something to hopefully have you live a little happier, a little healthier, and a little longer. Just Try This, after my conversation with Dr. Vonda Wright. Let's give Vonda a call right now. Vonda, how are you today?
I'm so well, David. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I'm holding up, still together, doing all right. First, I'm looking at this wall behind you, which I haven't seen before.
Yes.
And there's all this stuff hanging on it. What is all this? There are these medals and stuff.
I know. So you know me as a lot of roles that I play, but one of them is as an orthopedic sports surgeon. But listen, a sports surgeon can be sports surgeon or sports surgeon and team doctor. And my entire career, I've had the privilege of taking care of various teams. You know, most of my career was at the University of Pittsburgh. And while I was there, let's see, I was the head team doctor for the football team for a number of years, then transitioned to the Olympic sports teams. I then became involved with, I'm showing you my rugby sevens lanyard, and I took care of the world championship in Los Angeles with rugby, which makes, I say this with only the most loving heart, it makes American football look mamby-pamby. Both are over-the-top contact sports. You know, I ran a building that housed the Pittsburgh Penguins, the professional hockey team. I've been the doctor. Right now, this weekend is leading up to the PGA Tour Championship. For 3 years, I was the player's doc for the Tour Championship. So what you see here is just my life's work as a team doctor, the lanyards. There are stories to tell with each one of these. I could tell you a story on each one of these lanyards. It's pretty cool because what it allows me to do is go behind the red ropes, right? You know, nobody gets behind. The guards are everywhere except the team doctor, right? So that's pretty cool.
So you're used to working, I mean, you have sort of regular people that you deal with, but you're also dealing with like the highest of elite.
The elite of the elite. Yeah. And so I phrase it as I take care of athletes and active people of all ages and skill levels, from the backyard to the ball field and even to the boardroom, right? You can be in a corporate executive athlete type person, just wanting to perform at your highest, like you skiing 4 hours a day all winter long, right? That holy
consequences.
Cow. Yeah.
Okay. So what I want to get into today is hips, knees, and age.
Got it.
There's an intersection that happens here. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is that one of the main concerns here is cartilage.
Yeah.
It declines, right?
So let's talk about what cartilage is first. A joint, if you will, whether it's your hip, knee, or shoulder, is comprised of the ends of bones coming together. Now, the bones are pretty fragile and pretty rough. And so cartilage is like the bumper on the end of every bone. So in your knee, for instance, on the end of your femur, on the top of your tibia. And here for you physics geeks out there, cartilage has a coefficient of friction that is smoother than ice. So imagine a substance that is designed to be smoother than ice, so that as you're moving your knee through motion, when your cartilage is healthy, you don't feel it, right? So here's the deal, though. Cartilage is also very sensitive. We get one set of it. We do not regrow cartilage. And now we have techniques, surgical techniques that can help, but not in a way that I can just give you a magic pill, you grow a whole new bumper, if you will. So what happens, either due to direct trauma, you know, think of someone of any age, a football player, at 20, any age. You have a hard hit, the cartilage shears off, you have a, for lack of a better description, a pothole in your cartilage, that's arthritis. You can also get arthritis from rep after rep after thousands of steps per mile, just wear and tear. Because once you start wearing down your cartilage, it creates an inflammatory environment that we can measure in the joint fluid, which leads to more wear and tear, and it becomes a cycle. Before I go on with that, I want everybody listening to know that there are profound studies, however, that show that a lifetime of things like endurance running does not cause arthritis, because you'll hear some very misled doctors say, you better stop running, you're going to give yourself arthritis. Well, you can say that, but there's no data. In fact, the data show that people who progress through a lifetime of that kind of exercise end up healthier with healthier joints, probably because they don't weigh as much as the general population who, when we do population studies of people in the United States, we accept the fact that 70% of people do no form of mobility and about 65-70% are obese or verging on obese. And our joints, our cartilage, which I said was fragile, bears 7 to 10 times body weight. Right? I felt like I needed to tell you all that about cartilage to say, why does it happen? Why does it slow us down? And why is it associated with history of injury? But also, one of the sine qua nones of aging is the pillar of inflammation. Inflammation is one of the 12 pillars of aging. And as we accumulate enough birthday candles to set our kitchens on fire, our bodies deal with inflammation less and less well. And that just contributes to this picture of cartilage wear, which is arthritis.
Does cartilage have a blood supply?
No. I know that's the problem. Cartilage is made of a matrix. Literally, I'm putting my hands together for those of you who aren't watching this. It's like chicken wire matrix, like a sponge, and dotted in between, connected by lonely channels of communication, are chondrocytes, cartilage cells. But cartilage is constructed this way because what's its job? To absorb the weight of the body. It can't be a hard sheet. It needs to be a matrix to absorb the weight of the body. So we have matrix, little cartilage cells. They're lonely. They do not have a direct blood supply. They get their nutrition by diffusion from the joint fluid. Yes. So okay. You step on your joint, it pushes fluid into the matrix. The little cartilage cells get a little hit of nutrition. But imagine what happens then if the joint fluid you're feeding your cartilage is inflammatory, right? It becomes a little like a poisoned environment. So it's very interesting and very complex, and we're getting better and better at taking care of it, but not perfect yet.
Arthritis then, if I understand this correctly, is the reduction of cartilage to the point where you're not getting that nice cushion in between. You just got the nasty bones. Is that
right? That's right. Yes. So the analogy I give to people who live in cold climates is, remember the newly paved roads and black asphalt, smooth. You're like, this is nice. And then in the spring, when you have the cold and expansion and black, and you end up with potholes that your tire goes ka-clunk in, that is the analogy. We start out with smooth asphalt, and then we build up these potholes that you can feel as you're rolling across.
I want to go back to this inflammation idea. So
yes,
I've had some ongoing dramas with my knee for the last year or so, and I've become familiar with something called synovial fluid.
That's right.
Which is this like oily goop in there, right? That sort of lubricates
the joint fluid. It's the fluid your body makes to lubricate the joint. Yes.
And you mentioned that this fluid can become inflammatory. If I understand that, what does one do either systemically or acutely on the knee to reduce that inflammation in the fluid?
Well, I love that you asked this question, because when people come to me with arthritis, I don't start with, let's say they come to me with arthritis in the knee. And when I lay out my plan of care or how I treat this, they think I'm going to start at the knee. But what I actually start out with is exactly what you ask. How can you create an anti-inflammatory lifestyle? And they're surprised by that. But it matters. So how do we do that? Number one, I want to de-inflame your whole body by cutting out simple sugars and wasteful simple carb foods, right? Our bodies are not trash compactors. It matters what you put in them, especially if you want to get out of inflammatory pain. So I am not saying, athletes out there, you can't eat carbs. I am saying that your carbs must focus on fiber, 25 to 30 grams a day of fiber. So what does that mean? You got to read every label. Go to your pantry, turn it around. You're going to see 20 grams of added sugar. You're going to see 12 grams of added sugar. And you're going to say to yourself things like, why the heck does my healthy yogurt have 20 grams of added sugar? Well, the fact is, Americans eat 16 pounds of added sugar a month without even knowing it, yeah. Right? I know. So when I'm trying to create an anti-inflammatory lifestyle with my patients, you got to know what you're putting in and you got to eliminate sugar. And I'm sorry for those of you that still enjoy your glass of wine. The only low carb drink there is for your ski chalet after you're off the mountain is vodka soda. That's it. Everything else is packed with carbs, but it's your choice, inflamed or carbs. So that's number one. Number two, we focus our diet on green leafy, getting enough protein, eating fruit as dessert. I'm not going to tell you not to eat fruit, but I certainly am going to tell you to quit drinking juice, which is 500 calories of pure sugar, and stop mashing up your fruit into smoothies because you are pre-digesting the fiber and you're going to cause a sugar spike, which is going to make you inflamed. So if you want a fruit, eat the fruit so you get the fiber. So that's anti-inflammatory nutrition basics. You can supplement that with things like omega-3 or turmeric or curcumin, tart cherry juice, but then don't drink juice, right? So all those things help. Anti-inflammatory diet. Then the next thing I want people to do to control the pain of their arthritis is to work hard on becoming strong as a bull. Listen, our knees, for instance, are the innocent bystanders of our feet and our butt, core, and hips. So if we don't have enough muscle mass in our butts and our cores and our quads and hamstrings to cushion our knee impact as if like a shock absorber, your bones will pound together and you don't want that. You want them to slide together as cushioned as possible. And that takes muscle mass. Now, as we age, if we do not lift weights and do not focus on that, we will lose our lean muscle mass, both men and women. I've done the studies on it. Multiple other people have found that 80-year-olds who lift weights confer a 20-year advantage in terms of their strength and function over people who don't. And that prevents frailty, but it also protects your joints. So anti-inflammatory diet, get strong as a bull. And then people say to me, but what if my knees hurt? I can't exercise. Well, listen, do it in a pool. Get on a bike. Get on an elliptical, get on an assault bike. I don't care how you build lean muscle mass, you just must do it. That's number two. Number three, there are medications for anti-inflammation, right? I'm not opposed to non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen, like the prescription meloxicam or Celebrex, which help quench the fire, right? We would prefer you not be on these things long-term. Anti-inflammatories are cleared through your kidneys, right? So we try not to take them forever, but they can be highly effective. The next step in treating this pain are the injectables. Everybody that's listening is probably familiar with steroid injections, especially if we're talking knees for arthritis. I am not a huge fan of that. The research shows it lasts less than 3 weeks. And frankly, I think it's used too often, too much, without implementing all the other lifestyle things that I've just outlined for you.
Can I just tell you, I want to stop you. I had a cortisone injection in my knee, cortisone variant. I just randomly had my inside tracker blood panel done like a week later, and it was bananas.
Yeah, how was your blood sugar, right? How
was
your
unbelievable. My blood lipids doubled.
Yeah.
My hormones, everything was, I thought it was somebody else's blood work. And I didn't know what to do. I called my doc and I was like, oh my God, what's happening? So I talked to him and he's like, yeah, well.
You got a steroid injection, right?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Well, we say that it's confined to the joint, but the fact of the matter is when I have someone with diabetes or brittle blood sugar, I don't give it to them because I know that they're going to spike up to 300, 400. It's just too dangerous. I don't like to use it. So what do I like to use in, besides that? Well, for a very, very long time, we've used things called hyaluronic acid, which is the which is a huge molecule that's actually in your synovial fluid, and it works. It's kind of a mystery how it works completely, but I tell people it's like motor oil for your knees. Now, I've loved to use it every 6 months on people for years, but insurance barely pays for it, which is a problem. Of course, and don't get me started on insurance. They're looking for a way to not pay for any of your care. But hyaluronic acid has been effective in the knees of my patients, but now insurance barely pays for it. So I tell people, if you're going to have to pay for something yourself, I want you to pay for the thing that's most effective. And at this point, we have enough data to know that using platelet-rich plasma, which is drawing your whole blood, spinning off 5 billion platelets, you have to know your dose. It has to be at least 5 billion. And injecting it into your arthritic joint is highly effective. We have data on tendons, ligaments, arthritis. We now have good data on rotator cuffs. So there are more and more applications for platelet-rich plasma for inflammatory problems because it is a potent anti-inflammatory. We think that it interacts with the stem cells in the capsules of your joint to stimulate a healing environment. And in my patients with knee arthritis, I use this a lot because now I live in Florida. Nobody wants to get a joint replacement tomorrow here. They're all active people. They want to stay active. What people tell me is that after the first injection of 5 billion platelets, they get about 40% relief. After the second, they get about 80. And so we do three. And our research says that this can last a year or more. So what I've just outlined to you is my whole person approach to arthritis. Now, if you go to an orthopedic surgeon and he doesn't offer you all these things, doesn't mean he's not a good surgeon. It just means that he's treating your joint and not the whole person. But now you have all the other information and you can treat yourself the other ways.
I want to go to this inflammation again.
Yeah.
So are there blood-based biomarkers that you're looking at for systemic inflammation where you see like, oh, there's a lot going on here. We really need to get your whole body toned down. What are you looking at there?
Well, in a standard blood draw that you go to whatever LabQuest or whatever, the only one you're really going to get is a CRP, a C-reactive protein. And that just tells you the status of inflammation in your body. It's extremely nonspecific. It could be because you have a bladder infection. It could be because you have a tooth abscess. We don't know why you're inflamed like that. Obviously, you want it to be low. If I'm truly trying to get at someone's inflammatory state, I draw a special biomarker panel that includes tumor necrosis factor, IL-1 through 6. We look at free radical loads. And it's part of my Precision Longevity program, which is an above and beyond program for people who want to optimize health and live in peak performance. And I do a deeper dive for inflammation like that. The thing is, I'm going to be honest, many people can feel the inflammation and they might not know the level of it, but they know they're inflamed, their joints hurt. It's more than just their isolated knee. Their whole body feels like I can feel this when I eat sugar, which I don't usually eat sugar, but when I do, I can feel this. I can feel the difference in my agility in the way my joints respond, or if I even feel my joints. So most people know, we just don't know the numbers, right?
You know, you mentioned about get strong as bull.
So, yeah.
But there's a little bit of a contradiction here.
Uh-oh.
So getting strong as bull, I typically think of as doing deadlifts, squats,
yes,
things like this. If you're saying 7 to 10 times pressure, just my body weight, and then you add another, a lot of weight on top of that, is that helping out my cartilage or is it further damaging my cartilage?
Well, when I ask people to lift heavy, which I do ask people to lift heavy, it's not 1,000 reps a mile. Right? Lifting heavy is a very low rep activity. For women in midlife and beyond, it's 4 reps, 4 sets at a heavy weight. For men, it's about 8, right? If we're building power, because, you know, the trainers in your audience might be arguing with me, but if we look at what is the goal of the lifting I'm talking to you about, it's power. I want you to be able to get up off a floor. It's strength through motion. Get up off a floor if you fall, or not fall, just get up, or have enough agility to not trip over your own bag in the airport, which I get a lot of. Our office is right next to an airport. We get lots of tripping and lots of fractures. So I hear you. If you cannot lift free weights in the manner that I'm discussing, powerlifting, bench press, pull type, deadlift, squat, I'm okay with you working on a machine. Not really okay, but it's better than nothing. But again, you can't do 20 reps of a really light weight and expect to stimulate muscle protein synthesis or stimulate replication of your satellite muscle stem cells. You cannot. You have to put load, time under tension. So my answer to you is I get you. I hear you, but it's low rep, high weights, not rep after rep after rep.
I just want to put some numbers on this. My max dead weight is about, you know, on one of those bars, what do you call it? Trap bar. So on a trap bar, I can do about like 300 is like my upper limit.
Good job. Yeah.
It's a lot of weight for me.
Yeah.
But I can do multiple reps at, you know, like 225. I can do 10.
You don't need to do 10. You need to max out at 8. So whatever at your, at your last set, let's say whatever you can lift 8 times, that's what you max out at your last set. And you, your first set is less than that. And then you progress and then you progress. So yeah, you're not trying to lift max out at 300. You're taking 80% of that. And that's the highest of your last set.
I want to talk about an additive technology that I really like, BFR, which is blood flow restriction. I had the, what is his name, from Katsu on, and it was just brilliant. I read through the science on it. It's sort of like magic. So you're dealing much lower loads with BFR.
Yeah.
Because you're constricting the venous return, you're getting this like lactic acid buildup and this crazy hormonal response. So is that something that can be helpful in these circumstances?
We had talked about that offline before. I'm so glad that you brought it up. BFR is a technology that I use in recovering my athletes from surgery. We start it very quickly because instead of waiting on the joint to be able to accept load, I put them under BFR and we can build muscle. So that technology is also something I'm writing into my next book as a modality for longevity, because we know we must build muscle for longevity and we can't always bear the weights that we're talking about. So blood flow restriction, think of a blood pressure cuff that you've had around your arm. For those of you who haven't done it, blood pressure cuff around your arm, you can blow it up to different percentages. You can blow it up all the way so there's no blood flow. You can, if you want a certain kind of workout, if you want recovery, it's great for, I'm working with a group called Suji. It's another BFR company and we have protocols for recovery so that you can still recover faster without overloading your joints. And so I think this is great new technology to extend the life of joints that have done a lot of reps.
I'll say it's incredibly unpleasant if you do it.
It is. That's the thing. It hurts. And you know, it takes a mindset to be able to sit there and force yourself to do it. So there is that trade-off, right?
I've been using it for about a year. Well, this morning I had it on. I did a HIIT training on a bike and I did my BFR bands on like medium for 20, 25 minutes.
Wow, that's impressive.
And so I'm getting a muscle response in addition to the cardio effect. So
yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, we talk about doing Suji walks, which is exactly what you're talking about. You put it on, you go for a walk because you're not hooked to anything. I mean, the ones we use, you're not hooked to anything. And so you just go for a walk and you build muscle while you're doing your base training.
Yeah, really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about prevention. Yeah. So it sounds like it's inevitable that we're going to lose a certain amount of cartilage.
Yeah,
but how do we minimize that?
Yeah, we are going to wear our cartilage, but it's not inevitable to the point where everybody's going to need a joint replacement. Many of us will. And if we need it, it is one of the most, I'm going to show people who are seeing this on video here, is a knee replacement model.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right? It's a chrome bumper instead of a cartilage bumper on the end of the femur, on the top of the tibia. This is one of orthopedic surgery's most successful procedures, this and hip replacement. So millions of procedures, very reliable, very reproducible, but not everybody needs it. How do we prevent any of this? Well, number one, well, I don't want you to not do sports when you're young, but trauma contributes to a lot of this. So number one, don't get hurt. Number two, we have to be in control of our body mass, right? Remember, 1,000 steps a mile, 100 extra pounds. That's 1,000 extra pounds across this knee. When I got right out of fellowship in 2005 or whenever it was, a guy came to me. He was a youngish guy, but he had lost maybe 300 pounds. But
he lost 300 pounds?
Yeah. He lost several people of weight and he was still a couple hundred pounds. But in the process of weighing that much, the impact on his joints had destroyed them.
Yeah.
And here we have a guy who had done all the hard work, bearing that weight on his joints, even for a short lifetime, had destroyed them. So because he had done all that hard work, I gave him total knees. 15 years later, he circles back around, able to feed his family, able to play with his kids. So weight has a lot to do with it. If you want your knees not hurt so much, keep them moving, build some muscle, and unload them.
Before we're going to start an activity, do we need to warm the joint up in some way? Do we need to get that synovial fluid in there and warmed up, or is it already there? How does that work?
I would say that before every activity, not just for the synovium, but before every activity, we need to go through a dynamic warm-up and warm up every joint you're going to use, right? So it's not only to get your heart rate up a little bit, it's to get your blood circulating better. It can, by compression of your joints in a different way, start the exchange of synovial fluid. Those like my husband, he doesn't do this. He'd be mad that if he heard me saying that. But I was going to say, get out of their car, grab their golf clubs, go hit the first tee. That is a setup for, or go hit the basketball court without dribbling around and getting warmed up. And that's a setup. But yeah, we must warm up every joint, get our blood pumping, break a little sweat to then not get hurt.
I ski and I see people who just go from zero to like, let's go. And I'm not one of them.
Well, and that's dangerous because you're riding up a chairlift to the top of a freezing mountain where the temperature is 20 degrees colder and then everything's cold, right? So yeah.
That knee replacement.
Yeah.
Let's start with the two. So let's do knees and hips. So why would someone want a knee replacement? What are the circumstances?
I don't think anybody truly wants one, but here's why they decide to have one. Mm. After they've done all the things, life experiences, you know, they're sitting in the chair while everybody they love is out doing fun things. They can't take the pain another day or they've got to get their life back. That is when their mindset shifts to say, okay, I'm going to replace this joint. Because good surgeons don't treat x-rays. If you came to me with bone-on-bone arthritis but no pain, I'm not replacing you. Not until you say those two things to me, that you got to get out of pain and you got to get your life back. That being said, people come to that point at a variety of different cartilage states. Some people come so bone on bone, their bones are starting to wear each other away. Some people come with still some cartilage left, but their experience of pain and inflammation is so great, they're already there. So that's the long answer to why would anybody want one? To get out of pain and to get their lives back.
So if you go in there and you replace my joint, that means you're going to have to cut some bone in there. How long does it take to recover from something like that?
Well, let's talk about hip replacements, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Both hips and knees are outpatient procedures. Now, when I was training, you were in the hospital 5 to 7 days. Now you come in the morning because of amazing new technology, amazing multimodal pain relief. When I was still doing total joints, they would leave the afternoon, they would walk home, they would walk into my office. So the technology has made recovery much better. In the hip, you will walk the same day, sometimes without assistance, sometimes with a walker or crutches. And within a month, you have made substantial recovery. It's amazing for a total hip. And of course, it depends on how strong you were before your hip. If you've been debilitated for years because you waited 20 years for this joint and you have no muscle anymore, then your recovery is going to be slower. For a knee, knee replacement recovery is slower. Before you're happy you got your knee done, it's about 3 months of hard work. It's still outpatient. It's still multimodal pain recovery with not a lot of narcotics, but it's just a harder joint to recover. So first you work on swelling, then you work on motion, and then you work on strength.
And did I get that right? You're cutting the bone in there and you're replacing it with this thing.
Yeah. So when you look at a bone model, see this silver thing for those of you that can see this bumper was once your own cartilage.
Right.
And because your own cartilage is gone, we give you cobalt chrome or titanium back. The same with your tibia. The metal plate that you see across the plateau, which is the top of the tibia, supports your bone. In the middle of those two things, we put in a pad that's made out of, we call it poly. It's a medical grade plastic that becomes your articular surface. So here's what we're doing in a total joint. We are taking damaged, painful bone and cartilage out and replacing it with the exact biomechanic replica of your knee, right? The alignment has to be right. The distances have to be right. It's a science, right? Great joint surgeons balance your ligaments. You shouldn't go to anybody in the world for it. You should go to somebody who does it a lot because that's what they do, right?
What's the lifespan on one of those things? Like, do you have to do them repeatedly or are you good for like the rest of your life?
It depends on how long the rest of your life is and how you use it. But, you know, on average, 15 or 20 years. And so people historically have been like, I am going to wait until the last possible moment because I want to do this once.
Right.
I know. But listen to this. Would you rather sit around for 15 or 20 years waiting until you get old enough and lose all your muscle mass, not get to do any of the activities you love just to wait on your joint? Or would you rather get a joint when you're young enough to still water ski and ski and play tennis and pickle and then take the chance that you're going to have a great surgeon revise it?
Yeah, I sort of did that math the other day and I thought, okay, let's see, I'm 65 and nobody's talking joint replacement for me. But if I were to get my joint replaced, okay, they really abuse it. It's good for 15 years. Okay, that gets me to 80. Yep. But then at 80, I'm looking at another major surgery.
Yeah.
I don't like the sound of that.
Yeah, but listen, think about who you're going to be at 80.
Yeah,
you are going to be vibrant, healthy, trying to ski as much as you ever did. Chronologic age means almost nothing, right? How is your general health? What's your heart doing? What's your activity level? I have 30-year-olds that are less healthy than some 65-year-olds because of their lifestyle. So the oldest person I was ever part of their joint replacement was 103. I know. I mean, maybe that was a stretch, but it is not uncommon to replace the joints of 80-year-olds that are healthy.
I know people that hip replacement. It's mind-blowing to me. They walk home.
Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about.
Aren't you cutting through muscle to like get to the joint?
Yeah. Well, it depends which approach you use. From the back and the side, yes. But there's an anterior approach to the hip where you just go through muscle planes. You don't cut anything. You just spread muscles. And so that has a better recovery, supposedly. Although the other two have been used for 50 years now and are very good.
Let's talk about activities that are good and bad. You know, I'm guessing people who listen to this podcast, they're probably, you know, 40 plus years old.
Yep.
What are some of the things, like you mentioned, like running's fine. Some people would say running's bad. What are the activities you say people should stay away from?
With or without total joints?
Oh, they're just normal. They
just
don't
normal?
Have. Yeah, just normal people.
Nothing. Okay, let's name some. Don't take the risk of jumping out of an airplane. What if your bungee cord breaks? I mean, but in terms of impact versus non-impact,
yeah,
I don't.
Oh,
I don't say don't do something because there's no evidence that running causes arthritis.
Okay, so like if I decide to take up tennis, that's fine.
Well, depending on, I know the state of your knee. So in general, yeah, fine. Do it.
Okay. Knowing the state of my knee, what do you think about tennis?
Not today. Maybe later. Give us some time, mister. But late, I wouldn't say not to. And here's my general attitude on that. Doctors who tell patients to stop being active, doctors who tell patients just to grow up and act their age, you know what they're really saying? A, they're not thinking hard enough. They're trying to be protective of you, but what they don't realize is that saving mobility is going to save you from the ravages of chronic disease. By telling you to sit still, they're basically telling you to die because that's what happens when you sit still. So I know they don't mean it that way. Do not write me hate mail, but if in your protective nature, clinicians, you are telling people to stop being active, that is essentially what you're telling.
That's been told to me and I've left.
Well, and so here's the way doctors can work harder at that question. So let's say you have a banged up knee. The way I would answer that question, I would say, well, let's put you on an assault bike. Let's put you on a rowing machine. Let's put you on the crazy alpine ski thing where I pull down the handles and it pulls, I'm dying and I'm in good shape, right? Let's put you on those less impactful ways to stay healthy, but merely telling people to stop doing stuff and to sit still, that's a death sentence.
Give a little thought on the future here.
Okay.
So, you know, there's something people have been talking about is our exosomes, and seems as that might be associated with why PRP works well, is what I've heard from people. Because that's like the holy grail, right? Let's grow the stuff back. What are you seeing out there that may be around?
Well, when you want to grow stuff back, you need three things in a biologic system. You need cells, you need growth factors, and you need a scaffold. Each one of those three fields of science sometimes work independently. One lab's working on the best scaffold, one lab's working on the cellular component. Exosomes are our little droplets made from the cell surface membrane of cells that then contain growth factors that contribute to the environment, right? So what you're doing is adding humors to the microenvironment that are going to stimulate healing. I don't think they work in isolation. They still need cells to act on, and they still need scaffold. So in the future, I believe, I mean, we're doing great work now, that we will have a solution that has all three components that accurately regrow cartilage. Now, let's talk about that. When people have generalized wear and tear, such as end-stage arthritis, we're not going to regrow whole sheets of cartilage. But when you have a pothole, I had a vibrant young woman who slipped while on vacation and sheared off because of her injury, whole sheets of her cartilage in her 30s. But they were confined. They were isolated spots. We can grow cartilage in that instance because we do have scaffold that we then put cells in, growth factor, and then seal it in. That will create cartilage. So for potholes, we can grow cartilage. For whole joints, not yet. But what do we do for whole joints? Well, we replace them with metal. When it's one side of a joint, we can do two things. We can do a biologic replacement where we take the whole knee. I'm going to show you my femur, the whole end of the femur of a cadaver covered in cartilage, and we can replace a whole condyle, the weight-bearing surface of a condyle. Or we can do it with metal. So we're getting better and better technology.
Wait, back that up. How do you replace the whole surface of a condyle?
Well, let me see if this one will come off. So this is another model. So this is an example. See this cartilage hole?
Yeah.
If I want to fill that with cartilage, I wouldn't take it from the same person, but I would get a cadaver condyle, someone who's donated their body. We would take all of this. We would measure this. We would punch out an area like this. It's called a bio-uni. Punch out bone and cartilage from the donor and press fit it in here so that it is smooth. If you have an isolated hole like this.
Right.
Yeah. So, or you could replace this with metal, right? So technology is coming to regrow, to fill in potholes, maybe in the future to replace whole joints. You know, we can grow. We're on the verge of being able to grow a heart in a laboratory. Why not, right? So
what's the success rate on pothole replacement via cadaver?
Yeah. Yeah. More than 80% good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. You're so hopeful, Vonda.
I am hopeful. We are living in the best time to age in the history of man and woman. This is the best time so far.
Okay. So what I heard here was stop eating bad crap.
Yeah, you're not a garbage disposal. For God's sake, respect yourself more.
Get your whole systemic inflammation down.
That's right.
You need to get strong as bull, which means exercise, but you're going to need a lot of protein. Cause that protein synthesis.
Muscle protein synthesis, yes.
To happen. So I just want to touch on that. When you say a lot of protein, what are the numbers you want there?
1 gram per ideal pound if you're trying to build muscle.
And because there's a lot of different forms of protein.
Yeah, I don't care what it is. You can eat animal protein. 1 ounce of any animal is 6 grams of protein. An egg is 6 grams of protein. A cup of egg whites, 20 grams of protein. So you just have to start noticing what you're eating. You can eat all vegetable protein. It just takes more, right? It's hard to get enough, but people do it. Vegetarians do it all the time. It just takes more. And listen, I did watch a movie once. I can't remember what it was called, but the example they used when people say, oh, you can't build muscle by eating grass. I don't know. I was raised on a farm. Bulls are the biggest animals I've ever seen, and they eat grass. So you can build muscle if you refuse to eat animals. But here's how you do it, though. You have to eat protein at every meal. You can't just, if you're a one meal a day person, it's really hard to do it. So I ask people to supplement with protein, right? So just like you would supplement with turmeric, supplement with protein, a scoop of protein in a bottle of water. It's not meant to be a gourmet meal. It's meant to fuel you. Mm-hmm. So you just got to pivot your mindset that every meal has to be so amazing and pleasurable. No, it's fuel.
Protein. Is there a downside? Hard on my kidneys, hard on some other part of my body if I'm eating too much?
No, I don't believe there's evidence that it's hard on your kidneys unless you have kidney disease or whether you've donated a kidney, right? Most people know that about themselves.
We've got stop eating crap, get strong as bull, eat protein. Is there anything else people should be doing out there?
My recipe for midlife mastery and beyond is the things you've talked about. Number one, changing our mindset to apologize for our age in life. We've got to quit referring to, I'm looking over my left shoulder when I say this, to our 20s, when people are like, oh my God, it was the glory days. You know what? It wasn't as good as you remember. You had no money. You lived in your parents' house. You weren't done. You probably weren't established in your job. Physically, it might have been easier, but now you can be as healthy, vital, ash. So number one, change your mindset. Pivot it to look to the next 40 years. Number two, yes, anti-inflammatory lifestyle in the way we've spoken about. Number one, if you do nothing else, stop eating sugar. Decrap your body. Number three, lift weights, heavy weights preferably, so that we stimulate muscle protein synthesis. We stimulate our stem cells to be regenerative. Number four, not every workout you do has to be at the top of your heart rate range. You do not have to gun out at near VO2 max every time. In fact, endurance athletes spend 80% of their time in base training, which is much lower heart rate training. It is very good metabolically, gives you mitochondrial flexibility. And then twice a week, go ahead, gun it, VO2 max it. VO2 max training, which is the singular most predictable measurement of longevity and health. VO2 max training is 3 minutes as hard as you can possibly go, 3 minutes of recovery. Doing that three or four cycles once a week, once or twice a week, right? So you don't have to gun it out every day. Gunning it out every day is a great way, my friends, of ending up in my Monday morning weekend warrior clinic. That is the best way to get there. So change your mindset, anti-inflammatory lifestyle, lift heavy, low heart rate based training, protect your sleep. I used to say when I was training, I'll sleep when I die. Well, you know what? I'm going to die if I don't sleep enough. And so I'm in bed by 9:30. I'm up at 5, even if everything's going on. I'll leave my own party if I need to. I'll go upstairs. I need to go to bed. You can close the house when you leave. But that kind of repetitious sleep cycle is critical for me, and I feel the difference now. And then finally, I'm really serious when I say it matters who you surround yourself with, right? That's the community you've built, right? A community of like-minded people determined to be vital until the very end. I don't know if I've said this to you before, David. I don't know how you want to die, but I think we have a great example right now from last year when Queen Elizabeth died. On Tuesday, she had an audience with her new prime minister, doing her thing, living her life. On Thursday, she just went to sleep at 97. I'll take that. I'll take it like that.
I tell people that too. I said, I get how you want to live, but how do you want to die? And so my vision, and my wife hates this when I tell this, but what I want to do is I want to be hiking in the Alps. She doesn't like it because she's like, well, what am I going to do with the body? How am I going to get it down? The wolves are going to get it. Oh my God, don't do that to me.
Are there Sherpas in the Alps? They'll bring you down. Oh my gosh.
You do some other things. Tell people about some of the other things that you're doing.
So if you want to hear me go on and on every day, you find me on Instagram at Dr. Von der Wright, Dr. Von der Wright. I post every day. I posted today. What did I post about? About bone density and all these things. So find me there. I have a YouTube channel. If you need me in long form, find me on YouTube and subscribe so you never miss anything. I also have a podcast. I'm not that consistent, not like you, but I do have one called Hot for Your Health. And then finally, the last place, if you want me to say this to you in person, if you want me to draw your biomarkers, if you want to have me do your lactate threshold and all the things to build you a bespoke plan that's just for you, you come to Lake Nona, Florida and be part of my Precision Longevity program. Because I think some people can do it DIY, do it yourself, and other people thrive when we walk alongside you. And so that's what we do.
Amazing. That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
You're such a resource. I had no idea about the whole team doctor thing.
Like, I know. Look at my legs.
Rugby is just like the most insane. It's like 250-pound, like full-speed smack.
That's right.
No pads. Ow.
You know, the thing about rugby players, though, is, you know, on the field, they're animals I would never want to encounter. But they are gentlemen off the field. They are never disrespectful to me. It's amazing.
Okay. Very good. Dr. Vonda, it is always a pleasure. I'm glad you're my friend. And thank you for being on the show today.
Anytime, David.
Take care. Bye-bye. Big thanks to Dr. Vonda Wright for taking some time out of her busy practice to have a chat with us today. You know, knees, hips, shoulders, ankles, all these sort of joints, I never really thought about them too much. They just seemed to be like things that were there and seemed to work okay until like one day they don't work quite as well. And, you know, things that have my attention. I'm getting creaky. Still holding up, though. We're going to get with Just Try This after a quick word from our sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by Sunday's Dog Food. I don't have to tell you guys. If you own a dog, you know how important the dog is in your life. I've had a few dogs. They've been fantastic additions. Our dogs are so important to us. We want them to lead the healthiest, happiest life we can. That's what we like about Sundays. It's 90% meat. It's 10% superfood. It's 0% synthetic ingredients. It's super easy to use, super easy to store, and it's the best quality dog food we've come across. We are also initiating a Sunday's Dog of the Month program and presenting this month's dog, Scout. Scout is a 100-pound golden retriever who just adores a tennis ball throw. And I understand a dirty sock, too. Scout's really into dirty socks. I'm just having too much fun doing this ad read. So nominate your dog. Send in some pictures. Tell us what your dog loves to do. Okay, so now it gets really good. 40% off. Get that. 40% off your first order of Sundays. Go to Sundays4Dogs.com/Aegis. That's SundaysForDogs.com/Aegis. Or if you don't remember that, just use code Aegis at checkout. 40% off your first order. Your dog's really going to like you for this. This week on Just Try This, we got a simple one. So a lot of us have trouble sleeping. And one of the issues with sleep and what may possibly wake us up is really any kind of external stimulation. Because, you know, as humans, we sort of come from living in caves and worrying about the attack of the bear in the middle of the night. So we tend to wake up when there's any kind of external stimulation. One of the things that can wake us up is just a slight change in the light environment, meaning somebody turns a light on in the other room or your headlights outside or any of these sort of things. It turns out our eyelids are actually pretty thin and we perceive changes in light through our eyelids, even when our eyes are closed. So an easy tip is to just wear an eye mask at night, or if you're not into that, make your room where you're sleeping totally blackout. But you can get something. I mean, I got one of these things on Amazon. I think it's called Arctic Bear or something like that. What is it with bears? I don't know. These eye masks, I think they're about $5. Keep mine for about a year and eventually wears out and I get another one. But I wear it every single night where I'm traveling at home, if I'm in New York, if I'm in Utah, I just wear this thing. And then there's just no light that comes in. So if my wife decides to look at her phone in the middle of the night or a light comes on or whatever, we reduce that stimulation, we're probably going to sleep a lot better. So this week on Just Try This, reduce whatever kind of light may enter your eyes while you're sleeping, even when your eyelids are closed, because it may go through your eyelids. That's Just Try This this week. Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us. This is the part of the show where I ask you for a little favor. Please, please leave us a rating. Please share this with someone who you think may need this. And if you can, leave us a comment. All of this stuff is super helpful to us. Until next week, everyone, have a restful, productive, and joyful week. Next week, we're going to be talking about DEXA scans. What's a DEXA scan? Why do you want one? And what are you going to learn? That's next week on the Super Age Podcast. Until then, everyone, have a wonderful week.